Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast episode 233. Guys, we're closing in on the end of the year here.
Yeah, it's weird to think of that. You know what I'm going to start doing next week?
What's that?
My best of. I'm going to start prepping it so that I've got, so I'm not doing it the week before, like every other year ever.
That's a good idea. I already have my best of the last 6 months.
Nobody cares. Nobody even cares.
And I'm going to do what I always do and wait the day before and just try to cram it all into one time. Well, a couple of hours.
Anyway,
if you forget something that's very neat?
Then I am going to assume that one of you will pick up the slack.
Nope. That person who created that very neat thing will go broke because you didn't give them the extra promotion they needed.
It's true. Keep in mind, Nick, stuff that you like, Dave and I often hate.
Yes, so. That's right. So, for instance, if you forget to pick a Deadpool miniseries, the person who created it will probably go hungry.
That's probably true. There's no money in Deadpool.
And honestly, you know I'm not going to pick a Deadpool miniseries.
Certainly not in recutting the same movie and releasing it as PG-13 to the holidays.
Oh, are we moving to the news?
No. I'm just going to mentioning in passing that they're doing that.
Yes.
Yeah, but you anticipated where I was going with that, which is that, yeah, it's going to be best of time before too long.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a sense of how the year's been, like, for you? Like, comics?
So, I think... I feel like the volume of things I've liked is down, but there's a lot of stuff I've really liked.
That's kind of where I feel like I am.
And you know, a few of the books I really like kind of came to like some big finales, and you know, so Killer Be Killed and whatever Jeff Lemire's
Royal City.
Yep. But
Black Hammer. I mean, it's been a pretty good week.
It's the year of Lemire.
It is the year of Lemire.
There's for sure some cool stuff. There's this very week. There's some stuff I think we all really liked, and will make for an interesting recommends thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way? Like
I do. I feel like
maybe the overall quality trend is a little down, but the good stuff is really good.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I think that's actually exactly how I would say it. Is that it's not that the year has like produced like a flood of great stuff, but the stuff that's good is really good.
Well, I kind of started to think about it last night, and I was just kind of skimming down stuff on the wall, and I was thinking of like, oh, that's gonna be fun to talk about. Oh, that'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So there you go.
This is the first week. It's the week of first week of November, and first week usually brings with it a fair amount of comics, which is the case this week.
Yep.
And when we get to the picks, we group picked two books this week. We both group picked a pick and group cheater picked a pick.
I don't think that's ever happened.
No, it's never happened ever before.
Yep.
And they are in perfect balance.
Yep.
They're in a harmonious balance, as you will see.
Yep. But before we do that, quick store news. This weekend is Ravnica weekend. Come in on Saturday. From 1:30 to 3:30, or around about that time, our staffer Anna is going to run D&D 5e for the first time. And you could be a part of it because she's going to run. It is the Magic Ravnica world. It is set in that world, and that Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica book is supposed to be here on Friday. We're hearing rumors of delay, but
This coming Friday. In other words, it'll be available hopefully
the day before,
and therefore also on the day of.
Yes, unless
we'll have it in
sell immediately out.
Let me tell you this. Yesterday, Anna, bursting with enthusiasm, was like, let me tell you what the adventure is.
Oh.
And she told me the basics of the adventure and how it related to kind of Ravnica and magic in general.
What is it?
It's really cool, actually. It has to do something with a goblin mob boss.
Nice.
And an imprisonment. And like, there's some randomized elements that deal with the different guilds and make for kind of a different flavor for the adventure that nobody can predict.
Okay.
Anyway, it actually sounded really cool. I was like, oh, I would want to play this adventure.
And as of now, I believe we have 3 open spots, unless things have changed since yesterday.
Oh, yeah. If nothing else, we should post about that on Facebook.
So people can message and sign up for it.
It'll be like a little brisk D&D adventure with a really cool flavor.
And then if you want to stick around, or if you want to come in later, from 4 to 8, we'll be doing a booster draft. You buy 4 packs of Ravnica, you draft with other people. Everybody who participates gets a free basic foil land from Ravnica.
And I'll shake their hand.
And Dave will shake your hand. He won't be here.
Yeah.
But he will shake your hand.
We're going to Skype me in.
Yes. He will give you a Skype high five.
Put your hand to the screen. No, actually, go ahead and just touch it to it. Not close, but touching. Live long and prosper.
All right. Not a lot of news this week, but we'll run through it real quick. There is a Creepshow anthology coming to TV on Shudder.
Right, the horror streaming service.
Right.
I posted that link to our thing, but I have not actually read it.
So the interesting thing about this, it is done by Greg Nicotero, who is was a director of Walking Dead, and is also a Romero acolyte. He worked with Romero on Creepshow 2 and Day of the Dead.
Creepshow 2, but not Creepshow.
Not Creepshow. He was Creepshow too young.
Creepshow is decidedly better than Creepshow 2.
It says he met his mentor, Tom Savini, while visiting the set of Creepshow.
He's got his bona fides then. So, just as a quick aside, Creepshow was a pretty formative experience for me as a kid. So, I loved horror as a kid, or I was already kind of getting into horror through my brother. And I loved comic books, and like, y'all have both seen Creepshow, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the framing device is like a kid reading creepy comics? Old EC-style horror
and
comics.
Then aren't there EC-style bullies that harass him?
Yeah, and he gets his brutal revenge on it, because EC Comics were not about nice guy, level-headed people. They were about vengeance and payback. And that's the same thing, but that's what they were still about.
No, Dave. Payback.
They were vengeance, payback, and revenge.
Yeah, vengeance, payback, and revenge. Those are all different flavors.
I thought Payback was like a Mel Gibson movie.
No, Payback. Yeah, Payback is what you get if you wear a zoot suit and get vengeance. Revenge is more classy. It's what you do when you poison someone.
Was that
vengeance is done with a handgun. Revenge is done with poison.
Was Kevin Costner in a movie called Revenge?
Yes, he was.
In the 90s or late
80s?
There
was also a TV show called Revenge.
Was there ever a movie called Vengeance?
No, but there was one called Mr. Vengeance or something like that.
And there's also like Lady Vengeance.
Yeah, Lady
or
Vengeance.
Something
I think
like
a man called Vengeance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. You say it's...
What are we even talking about?
We're talking about Vengeance, Dave.
Oh, right. Right. So anyway, I was so into Creepshow, which was inspired by both EC Comics, but also they did a comic book adaptation of it that was drawn by Bernie Wrightson, the legendary horror artist, mm-hmm. co-creator of Swamp Thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Interestingly, I'm sure his art influenced, I think he had done in the 70s, like EC's type homage comics, I think. So it's interesting that he would end up adapting a movie inspired by the very kind of comics he had been doing. Yep. But I like that kind of synchronicity, and I really liked how he drew. And so in the Just Say No 80s, I was in sixth grade, and I did a poster that I copied his zombie style, which is very important. You get these strands of saliva between the teeth,
yes,
I determined.
Uh-huh.
Based on the Father's Day segment of it, by the way, for those keeping track at home. And there was like a zombie coming out of the ground, and he was like, "Drugs sure sent me for a trip." Get it? He died.
You're so edgy.
He died. It was sixth grade. I got second place. And I want to say the winner was a lame-o one that showed like a person, a close-up of like a tear.
Yep.
And it was very, it was supposed to be like, losing someone to drugs is such a tragedy. Don't let it happen to someone you know.
And to this day, I was like, still remember and seek vengeance on that person.
Yes, vengeance, revenge.
Or revenge.
And even sometimes payback. Now, that said, I feel like a Creepshow show could be kind of fun, because Creepshow had a little tongue-in-cheek. There's nothing, except for like the Evil Dead thing, which I think rapped.
Yeah.
Right?
Ash vs. Evil Dead did rap.
Yeah. There's not obviously like Hill House on Netflix is handling the serious horror just fine.
Yeah.
But something with a little tongue-in-cheek and some creepy twist endings and stuff like that. I feel like it can maybe find a footing.
Yeah, although Hulu's Into the Dark series has a little bit of that so far.
Oh, interesting.
Which I would recommend to you guys. Maybe I'll mention that. It's done by Blumhouse.
Okay. Is that the one that they described as like, Are You Afraid of the Dark
2.0
or something? Okay.
Into the Dark is
for grown-ups and not little babies.
It's a series of movies.
Yeah.
It's each episode is like an hour and a half. It's like a long... And each one is holiday-themed. So the first one was Halloween-themed. The next one, the one that just came out that I haven't watched yet, is Thanksgiving themed.
Okay.
And they're all horror. All
right.
So I'm curious to check that one out.
And the first one was all right?
Yeah, it was. I might talk about that in topics if we have time
cool.
for it. Thomas Hayden Church has been cast as Lobster Johnson in the Hellboy movie. First of all, that's great casting.
Yeah.
Second of all, Lobster Johnson's going to be in the Hellboy movie.
It's pretty
that's
awesome.
Nuts. That means that they are stealthily thinking of a Hellboy shared universe.
Yeah, I agree.
That
was huge news to me, not because of the casting, but because Lobster Johnson was nowhere near what Guillermo del Toro... Guillermo del Toro's Hellboy was kind of like Burton's Batman.
Right.
It was
very as much the creator, yeah, the director, as it was the original property.
And it feels like this is going to be truer to the Hellboy stuff. I'm excited about
that. Let's tell the studio audience what Lobster Johnson is, in case they don't know.
Oh, right. He is a like a pulp crime fighter.
Yep.
Who...
Kind of a harder-edged pulp hero.
Hard-boiled shadow type. He murders people, and then, like, he burns his lobster claw into their
which is like a ring he has with a lobster claw sigil. He doesn't actually have a lobster claw that's heated up that he puts on him. That's silly. Heated claws? What?
I mean, that does sound very pulpy, but you're right. It is a lobster claw ring.
He just... He merely burns his sigil into them.
Yes. That's
them into, like, their forehead or something?
I think he might. He's a hard-ass pulped.
But,
how does he, like, cross over into, like, Hellboy
stuff? Hellboy, like, reads his comics or something, I think.
Okay.
He was a fan.
That's weird. That's almost like the original, like, the Barry Allen Flash when they introduced him, who read comics about Jay Garrick.
And then his ghost shows up later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, does Hellboy, like, find out that he was real, or is he supposed to have been real and there were comics about him?
I think
it's both. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think he shows up because he's such a hard-boiled pulp guy that from beyond the grave, he seeks vengeance.
Ooh.
And payback.
Does he ever go after revenge?
No, he's not subtle enough for revenge.
vengeance, payback, and revenge. And revenge again. let's see. Thomas Hayden Church, who dead? Just remind me.
Lowell from Wings.
Yep.
That's a deep cut, Nick.
Was he also... that's kind of one of the things he's known for, though.
And
was
Sideways.
Was he Sandman in Spidey 3?
Yes, he was.
So,
by weird coincidence, I just watched that the other day, and let me tell you, Spider-Man 3 is a mess of a movie, but there's good scenes and good character bits in it, and he actually did a good job of portraying a somewhat weirdly sympathetic Sandman.
Yeah. I like Thomas Hayden Church.
He was in a movie that was very over the top. He was kind of nuanced. He was real low key and gravelly.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Because he has some acting chops.
Yeah, I could see him pulling off a kind of... I actually don't know exactly what Lobster Johnson's personality is like.
He's definitely a...
Shadow-esque?
Yeah,
stoic,
like a
kind
of... That is a fitting end for his kind.
Yeah. I could see... Church pulling that off.
I'm just more concerned that Randy thinks Wings is a deep cut.
You know what, Nick? We're old and people don't know what Wings is.
No, I bet. I feel like people kind of know what Wings is.
Steven Weber and Tim Daly and Tony Shalhoub.
I bet. Okay. People, if last week we had you and one of you emailed us, thank you, Russell. if you know, just send us an email. You don't have to be anything about the email, but it needs to say, I know what Wings is.
Bonus points if you can tell me your favorite episode.
Whoa. What was our last week's thing?
Last week's was...
Do you know what Twister is?
Do you know what Twister is?
Oh, wow.
Have you seen Twister, I believe?
Yeah, I believe have you seen Twister.
This week, the challenge is, I know what Wings is.
Awesome.
I was happy to get one. I would be thrilled just to have a flood of emails that just says, I know what Wings is. We have a new staffer starting on Thursday. I would love it if when she opens the email, there's like four or five emails that say, I know what Wings is. And she's like, what have I stepped into?
Maybe I can find a free comic for them.
Final story, and I'm super excited about this. Winter Soldier and Falcon is reliably rumored to be a series coming on Disney streaming.
I know you're trafficking in gossip, Randy.
I think this is pretty
locked down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is you know what's going to happen with it?
So it is going to be Winter Soldier and Falcon, played by
Sebastian Stan,
Anthony Mackie, a miniseries in the Marvel Universe on the Disney streaming show.
It's going to be some kind of bromance with Cap's best buddies.
Yeah, the two of them were so good together in Civil War.
Oh yeah. Well, so we're going to have Loki, a Scarlet Witch that is potentially going to star Vision as well.
That's our belief, yeah.
And Loki.
The Loki thing is its own thing, right?
Yeah.
It's not Loki and Scarlet Witch.
We had heard it was going to be like a magic anthology, but that seems like maybe that was mistaken information.
No. Yeah, I think that is. I'm just going to fork over the yearly subscription fee probably.
I mean, they also have The Mandalorian. Plus, they're going to have all the various Marvel movies on there and Marvel stuff, hopefully cartoons.
I don't know. Maybe this is where we're finally going to
watch the Iron Man cartoon of the 1990s.
Oh, God.
Just letting you know it's going to be hanging out there.
This will be where we can delve a little bit further into the Winter Soldier's like complete backstory.
Yeah.
See...
Wouldn't it be awesome if they actually had Scarlett Johansson in an episode?
Oh,
if they could do the Black Widow thing.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
Here's the thing. I'm excited about this, but I also think Disney streaming is going to be great. I'm hoping they're going to have all the various, like, the what was it, Tailspin?
Yeah.
And like the Lilo and Stitch series. And I was like, there was a bunch of good cartoons that have been gone forever.
Yesterday, I contemplated subscribing to the DC Universe.
You're going
to
jump in at some point.
We need to know, Nick. We need a man out there on the front. Well, we need somebody behind enemy lines.
I've heard rumors that the Titan show is good, and I know this...
I've heard it from a few people.
This week was the...
Insane people.
This week was the Doom Patrol episode.
And I heard the Doom Patrol was good.
And I heard the Doom Patrol episode was really good. And then, of course, you're going to have the Outsiders coming up next... I don't know when next year, but soon.
Outsiders?
Or the Young Justice Outsiders.
Yeah, Young Justice Outsiders. That's what will get me.
Yeah.
That's what will get me.
Well, and I'm curious about Swamp Thing and Stargirl. If those can sort of...
Those are going to be live action things?
Yeah, live action.
Interesting.
Apparently Swamp Thing's not in continuity with the other shows. I don't know why.
Just be all swamp all the time.
Just be swamped all the time.
All right.
You ready to swamp it up?
All right.
I want a t-shirt with that. You ready to swamp it up?
We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. Rocast. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 7th, and we're doing something we've never done before, which is we have two picks that are just group picks. We all liked them.
Yep.
We didn't want to divide them up, so we're just going to all kind of talk about them.
Yep. And every once in a while, we've had a single shared pick.
Yes. Yes.
Never
we've
two.
We've never done two. Never are there two.
And here, in perfect synergy, yin-yang synergy, we have a Marvel book and a DC book, both of which are pretty notable titles for their affairs.
Let's start with DC.
Oh, okay. I was going to start with Marvel.
Let's start with this one. You guys have been anticipating this, and I've been poo-pooing it for a while.
Yep.
And as it turns out, you guys were right and I was wrong. It is Green Lantern number one by Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp, and this is a great first issue.
Yeah.
Well, full disclosure, when I started to read it, I didn't love it. Nick was there when I was reading it, and I read a few pages, and I was like, this is a little bit goofy.
Okay, here's the thing about that, though. You read the first pages while we were putting stuff on the shelf.
Yes.
With a Morrison book, you sort of have to sit down and kind of give your full attention to
it. It's true. But I think we can kind of say, aside from, by the way, whenever Grant Morrison takes over a book, he always gives it a makeover in, like, the Morrison way. So, there's a new logo for this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
It's the storyline is tagged on the bottom, Intergalactic Lawman, for Hal Jordan.
Yep.
And there's a big ol', it says, Beware My Power, referencing the Green Lantern Oath, over the title. So it's got its own identity just right out of the gate on the cover.
I love that it says Earthman, Hal Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
Hal Jordan stars.
Brings justice to the stars. And he has some very specific ideas about Hal Jordan, which were fun and energetic, but we'll get to that in a minute. When it kicks off, it would sort of, you know, he's been calling this, what did he call this?
Law and Order in Space.
Law and Order in Space. That's not quite accurate.
No, as we know with all things Morrison,
it's a little bit. That was kind of a buzzy elevator pitch.
Yeah,
but it does begin by there's sort of we see several other lanterns, new lanterns that we've never before seen at mid-mission. It, as always with every Grant Morrison story, it begins with an energetic first page, which is like all the guardians up around the central power battery, right?
Yeah.
Which I have to say, Liam Sharp did a great redesign for the guardians. I like their look.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool design, and they're like Green Lanterns, Sector 2018.2, report.
All important with exclamation points in every one of those.
Yes,
lines.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, it's a great opener.
It's a little Silver Age or Bronze Age comics.
Yeah.
And it basically starts in media res with a lantern whose partner we don't see at first, but we'll get to know.
Yep.
Mid takedown. Now, let's see, what do we actually have going on here? There's a heist sort of thing that they're trying to stop. And the vibe I got with the aliens in here was very much the 70s and 80s Green Lantern Corps style.
Yeah.
Kind of very humanoid type aliens. Well, like humanoid, but also weird Morrison weird. He's having a lot of fun with their weird dialects.
Yep. Yeah, they all have different. They all have different things.
Speech patterns.
This Green Lantern is very snippy. I noticed.
Yes.
He's got a kind of an attitude, which I kind of enjoyed.
There's this great thing. He's like, I'm the 13th Earl of Everglow on the planet Melmore. This whole distinguished service in the Green Lantern Corps thing was my family's idea, not mine.
Yeah. Can you get into that through?
Why not?
Yeah.
Sure.
I thought the ring always chose somebody, though. But yeah. if it's like a lineage of
the Green Lantern always chooses from
their family.
Their
or something.
Family.
Yeah, it's a fun idea. I also like that the bird-like alien calls it a meat wagon.
It's almost a Book'em Boys Dragnet kind of opening.
And I was worried about the sort of space cops thing that was going to be too on the nose, but I should have known better with Morrison that it is goofy fun.
Yeah.
Like it feels like a fun version of it feels like Men in Black.
Yes. That's a good thing. Although there's a few different tones. Yeah. That opening is very Men in Black.
Yeah.
I like him when he's reporting in on that Crystal Green Lantern is cool too.
Yeah.
I actually think he's a known.
I've definitely seen a type of Crystal Green Lantern.
Yeah, this is a different one.
When they're loading him in and he's telling him that he's reporting to the Guardians, he describes those as a veritable who's who of space bastards.
Yeah, yep.
Let's see. And then there is a mystery that kicks off with another lantern who something bad happens to.
Yep.
I don't want to get too much into detail there. But it will end up impacting the life of Hal Jordan, who we see then a little ways, 5 or 10 pages in. It felt like a lot happened in this issue. I don't know if it had extra pages or not.
It does have extra pages.
So the Hal we see is a guy who has, quit the Green Lanterns, as he's in a perpetual state of quitting the Green Lanterns.
Well, I mean, he was put
exiled
on...
Exiled or whatever.
He was put on leave.
Okay, and is that DC continuity? I wasn't sure if it was DC continuity or just he's always on some kind of leave, basically.
No clue. I don't know what's been going on in Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns.
And you don't need to know for the story. But he's also been kind of like going through jobs.
He's no longer a test pilot with Ferris Aircraft. Was he insurance salesman at one point?
And apparently it sounds like these are all like for a few days.
Yeah.
The girl he's talking to, which is that kind of a one-night stand thing going on there?
It looks like maybe he's somebody he's living with.
I wasn't
sure. He does say, she guesses he was fired from his job for insubordination.
Yeah.
So they're kind of playing a little bit on the tropes of Hal Jordan. He's the Green Lantern, always throwing the ring down and walking away from something.
Yep.
But he is also the Green Lantern who is like the coolest dude under pressure.
Yeah.
So when something weird happens while he's hitchhiking, he just runs with it as if it's just the most normal thing in the world. When suddenly, like a bunch of like weird, shape changing like looking hobos start beating him.
Well, and he pinpoints him quickly. He's like, "You had a reaction to the guacamole in my burrito. You're probably from this one place." Like he is supposed to be like a very
sharp.
Yeah.
He's a seasoned vet who's also like not thrown by much of anything.
Yeah.
He likes a scrap clearly.
And he's also clearly got a bit of a rep.
Right. The series, there's lots of fun stuff in it, but I talked about how that, and there were events that happened, something bad happened to another Green Lantern and it ends up affecting him. And so before the end of the issue, there's like a pretty big action sequence that has a lot of cool scenes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Morrison is great at writing moments.
Yeah.
And I think unlike Bendis, who we can acknowledge at least he can do some good moments.
Yeah.
I feel like everything surrounding it was also fun.
That's the thing. It all hangs together well, and there's a story. And you know, one of my worries was that it was going to be too standalone, but he's definitely got an arc building here.
Yep.
And also, everybody talks about how Hal Jordan can be boring, and they're not wrong. Hal Jordan can be boring.
Yep.
This Hal Jordan I like. He's got a little swagger.
Yeah, well, it sort of reminds me of how everybody's talking about how Superman is boring, but when Morrison wrote him in All-Star, he was never less than very watchable. Like, he's not kind of like the sexy character like Batman.
Yeah.
By kind of maybe slightly heightening the things he's like, cool test pilot, scrapper, insubordinate, he kind of leaned into those and ended up with a pretty likable version. He's not a jerk, though.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, one of my
and I
favorite...
think, well, like, you remember how, like, when New 52 launched and Geoff Johns had him in there as a super cocky, overly confident guy?
Yeah.
He was too much of a jerk.
Yeah.
This guy isn't a jerk.
Yeah. My favorite part of the book is when he shows up and says, nobody panic. Chill.
Yeah.
I've got this.
Yeah.
And this is when something very big and, like, would be horrific if you were there was going on.
Yeah.
It sort of captures what you need to know about him.
Yep. There's some cool stuff on Oa. include with sort of some nods that Nick pointed out to me to some DC continuity.
Yeah.
But again, you don't have to have known anything.
No, because I think Dave, neither you nor I caught it because we don't read as much DC as Nick does. But yeah, there's a nod to some stuff that's going on.
There's a cliffhanger.
Yep.
And then there is a cool double-page splash of what's to come,
yep.
which has, like, sort of inset panels or of, like, some of the things coming. And I'm just going to say the one that I have to be excited about is Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Yeah. Also...
Are those the Dark Stars?
They look a little Dark Star-ish. I think every comic with a number one should do this.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's like a little tease of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah. The other thing that we should talk about is Liam Sharp's art, which is really, really good. We talked about his redesign of the Guardians is really good.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of crowding in the first opening action sequence where I was like, uh-oh. But it works to sort of give you the chaos of the situation.
Right. And it's like you're thrown into some crazy Doctor Who alien planet stuff.
And also just the wide breadth of the looks for his aliens. They're so varied and crazy. Yeah. And, but all of them have this uniqueness that I think you could easily just do kind of like a slapdash of, and he gives them all a great sense of personality.
Yeah.
It reminds me, I was telling Randy, when the first Green Lantern comics I ever read were just prior to the original Crisis on Infinite Earths when they redid everything.
Yeah.
So it was like, it'd be like... 84, 85, and maybe a little bit earlier. And there were some really talented artists on there, like Dave Gibbons was on there. And I forget who all else was, but I feel like it'd be like Jose Luis Garcia Lopez or like some of those guys. Whoever it was, there was somebody on there who did a backup story, I remember, that reminded me of Mike Deodato, the way he kind of did that heavy shadowing and stuff. And this reminds me of that. There's like a lot of Morrison stuff. It feels both modern and a little bit retro. Like it's embracing the kind of the craziness of the DC cosmic universe, things that kind of people don't normally do, like giving the aliens sort of thick accents, but not just writing like translated from whatever their species is.
Yeah, but giving them like a little weird.
Yeah, is kind of fun.
I think there was a lot of potential here. A lot of people have been excited about this, and I think it definitely lives up to it.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about the other one.
And then on a much more grounded note, but with some surprising surprises.
So this is Marvel Knights 20th number one. It is by Donny Cates, Marvel's new up-and-comer.
Yep.
Who's writing everything beloved from Venom to whatever else he's writing.
You know how I went and saw the Venom movie?
Yep.
I decided for the first time in my life to read a Venom comic.
Why would you do that?
And I decided to read the comic that I believe both of y'all have liked, Donny Cates'. I read the first two issues, which we happen to have some strays of. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it is.
And this is another win, I think.
Yeah, so this is... Trevor Foreman's on pencils.
Let's just quick say what the original Marvel Knights was, because I don't know if people know.
People may not know. Marvel was in bad shape about 20 years ago.
Right. Late '90s.
Late '90s. They had done some really just awful, ugly comics for a few years.
Yep.
And Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti, who at that point were mostly known as an artist-penciler team, artist-pencil-inker team, rather.
They were given editorial reign.
Yeah, and were given four books, all of which were not... notable books at that point. Daredevil, Black Panther, what were the other two?
Punisher.
No, Punisher wasn't until later. It wasn't the year before.
Oh, okay.
Inhumans was one of them.
Okay. Oh, right, the Paul Jenkins
with
one.
Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee. And there was one other that I'm blanking on, but Punisher they did later. And then it became sort of like, it was street level, but it was also sort of just like they had a different art style than everybody else. A lot of the sort of painty looking stuff. Kevin Smith did his Daredevil run.
Right, that was their biggest get at the time, because Kevin Smith had never done any comics at all, and that was when he was probably at his most kind of like energetic in the geek community, coming off of Clerks and stuff like that.
Yeah. In the intervening years, they did a variety of things, including Garth Ennis' Punisher.
Is like iconic now.
Grant Morrison's Marvel Boy.
Yep.
And there was a Hulk series that Azzarello did. So basically, a lot of characters did Marvel Knights. And essentially what it was it was sort of Marvel's Vertigo, but it wasn't quite that adult. But it was also like doing different takes on these characters. Stuff that basically bled into the Ultimate Universe and then into the Marvel Universe proper.
Right, a kind of a new theory, a somewhat more sophisticated storytelling. I think kind of coming off the 90s stuff where artists had been so kind of... There had been a lot of flashy artists, but like writers had sort of started to kind of get lost in the mix.
Yeah.
These kind of reasserted like smart writing and also kind of very modern writing. The writing, none of them felt like people from the Bronze Age of comics, really.
Right.
They were all sort of new takes on the characters. And so it kind of re-energized Marvel.
What's interesting is that, like the Ultimate line, it sort of feels like Marvel Knights became superfluous. Like, it became such a part of comics making at Marvel in general that you didn't need to call a thing Marvel Knights anymore because everything was kind of Marvel Knights.
Right.
So the question is, well, what do you do with the 20th anniversary of Marvel Knights, where your editor-in-chief, or he's even higher than editor-in-chief, he's like their chief officer now, Joe Quesada, probably wants to commemorate what really got him into the company. And then, so what do? You get Donny Cates to do sort of an alternate world story where nobody remembers the world as it was.
Right. It's a mystery unfolding where you have a number of these characters, a number of Marvel characters that it zeroes in on.
But the lead is Matt Murdock.
Lead is Matt Murdock.
Who has an encounter at a gravesite of someone who he doesn't remember why she's important to him, but this cop, Frank Castle, comes up and tells him that someone told him all about being Daredevil, and that you know, he needs him to understand.
Right, it's as if he like understands you. I know you don't know who you are, but I'm going to help awaken that memory in you.
And it's funny because even he's like I don't know all of this. I was just told all of this.
Right,
and then
whoever's pulling the strings is a big mystery.
And then Daredevil remembers who he is, but he still doesn't trust Frank, and so he goes off on his own. So
I have to say, their altercation was great.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. And he's also being pursued by someone. And so Matt goes off and looks for his friends who don't remember him. He has a run-in with some superpowered people he doesn't remember. And there are some bad guys who are also trying to figure out what's going on. And then there's a... I don't want to reveal it, but there's a notable person behind it all.
Yes, I was very satisfied with that particular reveal.
Yeah.
It's a character that I feel like doesn't always get the best representation, given how cool they should be.
Yeah, I agree.
And I feel like this feels more like the kind of machinations I want to see from them.
I agree. I like alternate world stories. I like worlds where things have been changed and people have to, you know, regain the
truth. Here's the interesting thing. I was not 100% sure this was an alternate world. I thought
I don't think it is.
You don't think it is?
I thought it might have been essentially some weird, like, the nature of whatever I don't know if it's reality shaping or what going on. Like, yes, Frank Castle is not a cop. But I wasn't 100% sure that, like, a regaining his senses Frank Castle might not think he's a cop. Or somebody told him he's a cop
I don't mean this isn't like Earth 616. I mean they've changed everything. It's an alternate timeline.
Yes. Clearly something is different. Although for one thing, like Matt Murdock has like grown a beard as if something has happened or he's been like lost for a while.
Well, I mean, the front cover is a bunch of people walking down the street of New York, and it's all the superheroes. Every superhero believes they're just a normal individual. There are no superheroes.
Right.
That's the big thing here.
And I think, like, a mystery like that is hard. It's hard to sell to, I think, people listening, maybe, how good it is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is, like, the character, the interactions between some of these characters are just, like, really well written.
Yeah.
Part of it is that I don't know what's going on when at one point Matt Murdock tries to show somebody his business card and that person sees a blank card.
Yeah.
It's not Doctor Who. So what did they...
Reality is different from everybody. Somebody's perceptions have been changed.
Yeah. I guess I can sort of see how some of that goes. I also liked the scene where Murdoch's radar sense goes off on some characters that we happen to know.
Yeah,
and
that
what,
was great.
Sort of what he sees and what they see is very different.
Yeah.
And it's always cool to see the Murdoch's radar sense ever since, I don't know, it was Paulo Rivera or whoever kind of started drawing it that way.
Yeah.
It's such a cool way to draw it. I also liked the kind of the pacing on it. There's a certain person that Matt meets near the end, and I don't know quite how they'll ultimately be relevant to the story.
I have some hopes for how that's going to play out.
But the way this is how I think you use comic book splash pages and big panels. It's like if something is going to be that meaningful to that person, then you can sometimes break out a splash page, and it doesn't have to be a fight.
Right.
So I felt like Donny Cates had Like really a strong sense of like form and his craft here.
Yeah.
And Travel Foreman does an amazing job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. I haven't read, I had to have Nick remind me, Travel Foreman did some of the art on the Immortal Iron Fist series, which had, like, amazing art throughout from David Aja, and then also some several other really good artists in the mix.
He's done other things, but that was the one that I could easily remember.
You know, this book has an interesting structure where it kind of ends about, like, three or four pages before a pretty notable teaser. And those, so the ending is really good, I think, and then the teaser, I think, is really good.
Yeah.
Yep. It kind of has that energy of, like, the ending of a Marvel movie when you're like, oh, man, that's so-and-so, or this so-and-so is behind this, or whatever.
And it's got, like, this nice little stinger to it.
Yep. So, Green Lantern number one and Marvel Knights 20th. Number one or Marvel Knights 20th, are our twin picks.
Yep. All right. So my picks, and I feel like we're not going to have a lot of more number ones, although Dave has one. Maybe Dave should start. You have another number one?
I have two other number ones.
What? But Dave, you're usually the guy who picks a graphic novel.
I know. Well, I do have a graphic novel to talk about, but I didn't have time to read it.
All right.
So, the first pick was kind of an oddball one for me. I have not mostly followed John Layman's stuff. Even Chu, I didn't necessarily follow all of, although I liked it. Here he's doing a kind of a sci-fi horror comic with a sort of some of the larger-than-life qualities that Chu had, which is to say...
The title?
The title is Outer Darkness, number one. You know, almost think like if in Star Trek... If, like, paranormal stuff was so common in space that a ship would always have an exorcist or multiple exorcists on it, that, you know, ghostly sightings would be a common thing, that parts of your ship would have supernatural abilities.
I mean, it sort of felt like a Star Trek by way of Grant Morrison.
Yeah, and the cartooning in it is very cartoony, so it kind of has a larger-than-life quality, too, even though this is... adult enough that they, like, drop the F-bomb and stuff like that, because these people are all a little bit jaded by the kind of horrors they've seen.
Yep.
And there's a captain who's a bit on the outs for... he's kind of playing by his own rules. I think he's a little... I'm going to say a little Captain Kirkish if Captain Kirk was a black man with a scratchy beard. He definitely does something unorthodox in the beginning and gets himself kind of bounced out of the captaincy, which is even in the backup, John Layman, the writer, acknowledges he's going to play around with some of the tropes of sci-fi.
Oh, I didn't read the backup piece.
Oh, it's worth reading. He talks about, he's like, you're going to see some of these things filtered through certain tropes, but he's definitely hoping to bring his own spin to them.
Yeah.
But it's a tried and true formula, a kind of a, hey, there's going to be a way you can get your captaincy back, but you're going to have to do something really dangerous or whatever. Anyway, I actually, the cartoony art, which I don't know quite how to describe other than to say, like, if, like, I don't know, like Hergé or somebody, who else is a cartoony cartoonist?
I don't know, but you're right. It's really good. I like it, but I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
It's kind of got an animated film, like, Korra or, you know, along those
lines. A little bit, but the characters are very kind of, like, they're fairly exaggerated, and yet there's a little bit of, there's kind of some gravity from the dialogue, and they don't shy away from their R rating, but it's big, larger-than-life characters. I liked all the personalities in it. I liked him and his, like, kind of second-in-command guy, who's this big, like, bruiser-looking voodoo practitioner.
I was going to say, wasn't he, like, a voodoo doctor?
Yeah, but he's built like the Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, I liked all the art in here. There's a cool introduction of, like, his crew members, and you find out, you know, sort of you get a walkthrough in a way of the universe as he's kind of touring his new ship, which is really fun, and meeting the crew in the same fun way that, like, the Orville honestly had a very fun crew introduction. There's some crazy stuff, like exactly what powers the ship is crazy, and I love the dark scene that followed that.
Oh yeah,
it's so messed up.
I also love that he basically immediately finds someone who's like an outcast. He's like, no, she's on my crew now.
Oh yeah. Without saying too much, something bad is going to happen to a prisoner that is on the ship, and he like pardons her, and. What is it? Somebody says this person has convictions for conspiracy, larceny, mutiny, and desertion, and they're like, she's exceptionally treacherous, and he's like, that's good. Sounds like she's got survival instincts. Yep. He's like, I can use that.
Yep.
So he's a for sure plays by his own rule kind of guy, and I really enjoyed the kind of large over-the-topness of it all.
I really like the mix of
magic. It was not as serious as Star Trek.
I really like the mix of magic and sci-fi. I mean, yep. It's been done before, but I don't think I've seen it quite this way before.
Yeah, agreed. And he talks about influences like Alien and Event Horizon.
Yeah, Event Horizon, you can definitely see it.
But I think he's a comic book guy, and I think the same way that Chu was unabashedly comic booky, this is kind of an unabashedly comic booky sci-fi book.
Well, Event Horizon, too, was like, and most sci-fi horror, it's about these science fiction guys running up against supernatural things.
Right.
And this supernatural has been incorporated into their ships.
Right.
They're used to it. Like, they're like, well, yeah, there's ghosts, and there's... We use gods to power engines and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Outer Darkness number one, I think, is for sure worth a look for y'all.
And I think all three of us liked that one.
Yeah, it was really good.
What else? Right. Randy, what's your pick?
I am picking Champions number 26. This is part two of what they call Warriors of the Weird, which the champions have wound up in Weird World, which is Marvel's sort of fantasy world. They have been transformed into fantasy versions of the characters. Most of them don't know what's going on. I think Lady Ironheart, who is known as a pure paladin of good, she's realized that she does not belong here. But the Mystic Marvel, the Shadow Spider, a.k.a. Miles Morales, Brawn Hammer, a.k.a. What's his name?
Oh,
Alexander Cho.
Total Awesome Hulk?
Yeah, Amadeus Cho.
Amadeus Cho, yes.
By the way, is Miles Morales the Rogue?
He is the Rogue. Okay. And he also has teleportation power, so it seems like he's almost got the cloak.
Oh, okay.
He's got, like, a shadow cloak.
Yep.
But there's also the champion's villain, the Master, has found his way into here and has basically become a bad guy.
Champion's villain, which is a.k.a. the old Alpha Flight villain, yes.
Yep. And there's this big sort of throwdown between the good guys and the bad guys, and this sort of underground, what is she called? The Marsh something. Swamp Queen.
Oh.
I'm not quite sure who she is, but there's like, she's obviously running this sort of resistance underground. The Master's troops find them. There's a big throwdown. This is sort of fantasy meets superheroes in the same way the Cool and Goth story for X-Men that we all love that probably nobody listening to this knows.
But everybody should know about,
yep.
Even though it happened like 30 years ago.
Yeah. But it's a great mix of fantasy and superheroes, and I really like this cast, and definitely recommend it.
You know what, as a kid, one of my favorite comics, although I very much like that X-Men two-parter with Kool and Goth, something that has been more often reprinted is the one where the X-Men and the New Mutants went to Asgard, and they basically had fantasy adventures.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing, it was like really the New Mutants one, because they got split up, and each of them kind of went their separate ways, and like Sunspot became like this barroom brawler who was like landing all the babes. Wolfsbane kind of went off in the forest and met another shape-changing, a wolf guy.
Yeah.
Karma got stuck in the desert and had to lose weight while she fought giant snake monsters.
Yep.
It had all happened.
Yeah.
Everybody had these kind of different adventures. Now, I wouldn't assume that that would be the format, but I kind of do like when characters aren't immediately on a mission, when sometimes they can kind of live it up a little in that world. Is there any of that?
Not really. They're on a mission.
They're on a mission.
It is the Resistance versus the evil lord kind of thing.
That's closer to the X-Men approach, where there was a definite, let's try and overthrow this warlord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like this quite a bit, and I do think more fantasy plus superhero would be a good
idea. Somehow didn't read the previous issue, and that is super up my alley, so I'm going to definitely read it this week.
It's great.
Nick, what's your pick?
I'm going to be a little bit of a broken record and pick Batman 58.
Oh, my God.
There are no dead horses. There are no marriages that have been annulled or collapsed.
Is there a dead horse seeking vengeance or possibly revenge?
No, but I would read that.
Yeah,
especially
sure.
If Tom King, if like that horse came back.
Equine payback.
Equine payback.
You know what? There is the penguin, though.
Yeah,
so some animal does get hurt in all Tom King books. In this case, it's the penguin.
Are you saying that the penguin is an animal? I don't
think
it's right there in the name.
But this is the start of a new story arc, which... I mean, it's weird to say with Tom King's Batman because it's all one giant story arc at this point.
Right.
But this is a starting point for a Penguin story.
Okay.
And
I like the Penguin, but there's been about 80 different incarnations over the years.
Yep.
Several of which I like.
I still miss Cockney Penguin from the Arkham City.
Yep.
This one sort of takes that idea and also sort of the Penguin in his heyday where he's fighting Batman with
his
umbrellas.
He has umbrellas on that page. That is one that they don't often return to. Mostly they like the guy who's like the information broker from the animated series in the 90s.
Yeah, this is sort of homaging all iterations of Oswald Cobblepot.
Yep.
Sort of in the sense that he's mourning the passing of someone that was close to him, yeah. While also dealing with fallout.
Hey, when he's crying, is he like, wah, wah, wah?
He does not cry. The penguin does not cry.
Oh, okay.
While also dealing with the fallout of him failing Bane, which he has been working with.
That's probably a rough person to fail, if I had to guess.
Yeah, especially since Bane is Tom King's ultimate villain.
Like, I know Bane is, like, a tricky dude, but, like, I feel like Penguin is, like, the kind of, like, he's essentially a crime boss type himself.
Yeah.
It's hard to see him being a lackey without sort of some backup
plans. That's the thing. There's more to it. Penguin is probably one of the more complex of Batman's villains,
yep.
and Tom King is making him that.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, actually. I thought it was a great service to the character. There's fallout from the Bruce Wayne when he's on the 12 Angry Men case from a couple of weeks ago.
Yep, but his Mr. Freeze court case.
There's also a threat to Alfred in this. Also, Alfred is cleaning the Batcave, which is kind of awesome.
Is that threat an overbaked ham?
No, it's not an overbaked ham. But he is cleaning the teeth of the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
That's ridiculous.
I like that.
Tom King, you wacky man, you.
He cleans the Batcave. He's going to have to get those teeth get really, really dusty. And also, there was some blood spatter from a battle with Zoom from a while back ago.
Yeah. I feel like that's what you make Batman's son do.
Is that what you make Damian do?
Yeah, go clean the teeth of the T-Rex teeth.
Or how about the Rick, the new Nightwing?
Rick, I don't remember my previous life. Yeah, mostly cleaning.
Mostly cleaning.
All right.
But anyways, I don't want to get too far or spoil things too much because it's a really great issue that Batman is sort of in it, but it's just very kind of tangential. This is really most... this is about Oswald Cobblepot, which is very, very interesting, and how he fits into Tom King's larger Batman story.
Cool. Secondary pick?
My backup pick is Dead Rabbit number 2, which is Jerry Dugan and John McCrae's crime noir anti-hero / kind of superhero.
He reminds me of Parker. He's like a professional villain.
But he's like a masked villain.
Not Peter Parker, but the... Donald Westlake Parker, a.k.a. from the movie Payback.
I mean...
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's
actually true. Nice bringing it around.
Oh, shit.
But this is sort of about a guy who is a bad guy. Let's just put it that. He steals from everybody. He doesn't outright kill anybody. But he has killed a lot of people, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, he's kind of a Punisher meets... I guess...
He's a bank robber.
Yeah, bank robber. But it's him getting back into the old life, bringing back the friends he had, the cohorts in crime that he had, while trying to pay his wife's racking up medical bills. Because he does have a reason for his crime.
Yep.
But the past is slowly catching up with him, and...
Yeah, there's this whole thing where, like, somebody stole millions of dollars from a mobster and named him. Like, when he quit, they basically conveniently blamed him.
Yeah.
And so now he's basically this guy who the mob boss is like, the Dead Rabbit stole all this money from me.
But it's a great issue. I thought it was just as good as the first issue,
honestly. I did too. It's a good read.
I like the introduction of his friend Wheels.
Yeah.
He's a great character. And
you know what's funny is this is not Garth Ennis, but I think when you work with John McCrae, you may get a little that
it feels very Hitman.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that energy to it. There's a little bit of that. It's not parody, but it has a little lightness to
it. You say, like, the crime masked guy that's the crime that kills people, and it's like, that could be really serious. Somehow it's not.
Yeah, the crime is definitely there, and there's, like, bad things happen, but it's got a little lightness to it. It's really good.
And McCrae's artwork is gorgeous. The city feels very lived in, and, you know, the backgrounds aren't skimped on. He draws a shopping cart like I have not seen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is drawing a shopping cart like a pro, I gotta say.
I'm like... I don't think that is something that I've seen very often drawn.
Yep.
It's a great second issue, and I think people should really tune into this series.
Dave, you're back up.
Tell us your other number one.
My other number one is called The Empty Man, and it's a new book from Boom, written by Cullen Bunn, who does a lot of horror stuff, and this is another horror outing.
Yep.
we were not sure if this might have existed in some form previous to this.
This is definitely some kind of sequel follow-up or something.
Right.
But you haven't read the previous one.
I haven't read the previous one, and I feel like I was able to just dive right in. Essentially, so this the title, The Empty Man, I was going to also say up front, the main interest I had in this was that I had read from the solicit, it sounded like Stephen King's The Stand. I like viral thrillers like The Andromeda Strain and The Stand and even something kind of mid-level like, what's the one that had Cuba Gooding Jr. and Dustin Hoffman?
Outbreak.
Silence you. Anyway, I like creepy viral thrillers that have a little bit of an apocalyptic tinge. This one is more like The Stand, but even more like in The Stand, Captain Trips was still like kind of just a really horrible virus that killed people, like terrible flu. Yeah. This actually is called the Empty Man disease, and it's fascinating. It almost sounds like this weird infection like Slender Man or something like that, where it starts out with people, you sort of see this through the eyes of a particular family whose mother might have contracted it, and you see through various newscasts and other creepy sequences, you kind of start to find out about the symptoms as you go in a little ways. But it's like people start seeing visions of this person, the empty man, as a sort of shadowy figure, like on the periphery of their vision, and it's like he's getting closer. And people don't know, like, are these hallucinations? Is this somehow a real person or what?
Right.
And then they start to act out, like, kind of violently. There's, like, killing sprees and suicide pacts and things like that. I actually wonder if this was based on the Slender Man, both the myth and the reality, where there was, like, some people who've, like, the girls who tried to kill that one girl, or did kill that one girl?
I think they did.
Over, like, belief that Slender Man was real. I think they almost ran with the notion of it as a pandemic.
Right.
And there's some pretty creepy things that happen in here, including, like, seeing something from the perspective. You, like, see at one point through the eyes of the mother how she sees things, and it's pretty disturbing. She's, like, looking down on a bunch of people, and it's almost like she sees them. They don't look... Well, at first it looks like they're almost, like, skinned humans, but then you're like, their faces don't look right. They look like almost like some kind of slightly weird Lovecraftian things or something from The Thing. Anyway, I don't want to say too much because I think this is a really great intro issue, and it does the stuff that I like, which is it walks you through a little bit of like life in this world. If you're there, I don't know what I would feel like is maybe a few months into it. It hasn't like overswept the world, but everybody knows about it and everybody is worried about it, and kids at school talk about it. Like somebody says their mom is the girl who's the daughter of the mom says her whole family is sick. And everybody is, like, instantly afraid of her, like, that she could have contracted it.
How many horror stories does Cullen Bunn have living in his head?
Millions.
What's another one? Harrow County?
Cold Spot?
Yeah.
Regression?
Slightly with Sixth Gun.
Yeah.
It has supernatural elements.
All of this stuff has some sort of supernatural horror.
Yeah.
He has the House of a Thousand Corpses.
It's true.
And then they sort of, like... What also sort of adds a little, not a twist to the end, but there is a suggestion that there's other people out there that may be working for the government looking for people who are infected, and there's a bit of a suggestion that they may be worse in some ways than the disease. Whatever their interest in them is does not seem to be benevolent.
To utilize this.
Something like that.
That's interesting.
Anyway, I thought it was a great first issue, and the art from... what does it say on that, Nick? I don't know if I know the artist.
Jesus Hervas?
Yep. Completely new to me, but reminded me of the kind of people Greg Rucka works with, like Michael Lark and...
Gatos.
And Gatos and things like that. Yeah, anyway, really liked the artwork on it. So I feel like horror fans should check it out, virus fans should check it out, Cullen Bunn fans should check it out, and Empty Man fans should check it out.
Very specific. This is a good time to mention that we just added Cullen Bunn to our...
bestsellers.
Our bestsellers, because he's been doing very well. And in fact, there is a trade called Empty Man that collects the first miniseries that I guess... is also about this.
Well, I guess I need to look into that and see, because, like, does it show the very early stages, or is this a flashback it shows the later stages?
It says it's been 1 year since the first reported case of the Empty Man disease, and no drug has been able to slow its progress.
Okay.
The cause is unknown, and the symptoms include fits of rage, hideous hallucinations, suicidal dementia, followed by death or near-lifeless, empty state of catatonia. As murder cults rise nationwide, the FBI and CDC enter a joint investigation.
For sure, that sounds like this... So this is either a new serialization of it, or...
No, the original artist was Vanessa Del Rey, so this is like a new story in that world.
Okay, well, I obviously need to check that out. It slipped under my radar initially. Yeah. Okay. Randy, do you have your secondary pick?
I have my secondary pick, and it is Immortal Hulk number 8. I've picked a few issues of this book, which is definitely going to make an appearance on my best of list this year. There is a shadowy government agency, Shadow Base, that has captured the Hulk after his fight with Sasquatch and chopped him into little pieces and is keeping them all in jars.
Oh, so that cover that I saw that Alex Ross, I think, might have done of a bunch of jars on a shelf, which each had like some body part of the Hulk's in it, was not one of those teasers where that does pay off.
No, no, they have determined that the Hulk is immortal. And somewhat sinister in
that
this.
That is like what the title of the series is, right? Yep, so that's like the culmination of it.
Basically, there's this sort of evil scientist. They're studying him. They're like cutting his heart open to see what happens. They're testing his healing factor so they can make use of it. And he is like... Basically, this guy is talking to the silent head of the Hulk.
That is the weirdest thing ever.
Smiling at him like he can't...
Right, it's like emoting at him as he talks to it.
Because he can't talk, but there's a great payoff sort of in the middle of the book. Very EC Comics horror. And then there's also like Captain Marvel and her team. Basically, they were used to bring him in. Like the Captain Marvel, and the Avenger brought him in. And now that he's gone, Captain Marvel is not happy. The government seems to have basically kidnapped the Hulk. So she puts Walter Langowski, now depowered, in charge of
AKA Sasquatch.
Although he's not that anymore.
Right.
She puts him in charge of a task force to go and find the Hulk. And well, what else are they going to call it but Gamma Flight?
Nice.
So there's some nice, fun superhero stuff in here. It continues to be this sort of the Hulk by way of horror comic, specifically like an EC horror comic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good book, and I'm really, really digging it. Also on my list this week, X-Men Red number 10, which is a big throwdown between Jean Grey's X-Men and Cassandra Cain. Really enjoying this book, which continues to be a sort of like, how do you fight supervillains without just being fights? Can you do a way that is can you be a peaceful warrior?
Interesting. That's also reflected in Grant Morrison's Wonder Woman Earth One series stuff.
There's a new James Bond number one, which actually weirdly focuses on Oddjob as operative of Korea, I think.
Yep. And it's part of like a new ongoing series with Greg Pak, aka World War Hulk, and Planet Hulk doing writing.
There's Han Solo Imperial Cadet number one, which it basically fills in the gaps between Solo, the Solo movie where he winds up in the Imperial Army?
Or Navy?
Or it's the Navy, and what happened there. That was kind of fun. Doctor Who, the 13th Doctor, finally comes out. This is the first issue of the new Doctor. Has a bunch of cool covers, written by Faith's Jodie Hauser. Runaways number 15 continues to be a fun book. Doctor Strange number 7, which has Doctor Strange dealing with some imposter who took over his place while he was in space. Farmhand number 5 wraps up the first story arc of that. And I want to give special mention to the Domino trade paperback. This is actually one of my favorite series of this year. Gail Simone has done some really fantastic things with her. She's doing great stuff with the supporting cast Outlaw and Diamondback. There's also some Shang-Chi in here. And I highly recommend it if you haven't been reading it.
It's a breakout book.
Dave, what else is on your list?
Anybody who's been watching Netflix has probably watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, a very cool show. The comic that inspired it is not available currently in trade. It just happens to be between printings, but you can get a sample of it with a $1 reprint issue of the first issue.
Also, it's coming back in print this week.
Oh, nice. So you can try it out, and if you dig it, pick up the collection. It is the inspiration for the TV show, but it's very different from the show. I think you'll see stuff in it, though, that you like. The art from the opening of credits of it is in there. And as flipping through it, I was like, man, I'd forgotten the art was so good.
Yeah, Robert Hack is amazing.
Yep. Let's see. I didn't read this, but there's a Typhoid Mary X-Men crossover?
Yeah, they're doing Typhoid Mary like one-shots because she was in the Iron Fist show.
Makes sense. Yeah. I have to just randomly mention Iceman number 3 because it reunites him with the characters of the old Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends series that, for whatever weird reasons, had Spider-Man, Iceman, and Firestar together as a superhero team. And they do all meet up in this, and there's a great cover of them taking a selfie together. Yep. It's adorable.
Does Spider-Man... So I think Iceman probably seeks vengeance. Spider-Man seeks revenge?
Yep. No. And Firestar is after fiery payback.
Payback, yes.
Another weird one I'm just going to mention just because, the Sideways, the kind of Spider-Man-esque character from DC, has an annual this week with the, I don't know if this is like in a time-slipped universe kind of thing, but it's got Grant Morrison's Superman from when he wrote Action Comics like 7 or 8 years ago, whenever they did New 52, 8 or 10 years ago. Yep. The one that was like the blue jeans wearing t-shirt wearing social crusader, whom Morrison would sometimes describe as Super Bruce Springsteen.
It's also utilizing, I did read this one, utilizing the Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
the Cheetah. And
I knew that Morrison had done some, like...
He actually worked, some of this is him.
He kind of did some plotting and editorial work on it.
Yep, it was interesting.
And lastly, I want to mention a naughty graphic novel called Drawn to Sex, The Basics, from Erica Moen. We've talked about her before. She does the comic Oh Joy Sex Toy, which is an online comic.
Yep.
And basically in it, she reviewed sex toys.
Uh-huh.
But every once in a while, she would also just talk about certain, I'm not even going to name them, sexual acts, and sort of talk about how they work. It would be kind of a basics of certain sexual acts. This whole book is like an expanded version of that. Everything in this is sort of basic acts and things like that.
This is Sex 101.
It's Sex 101, but like, this is not the Sex 101 you would get in high school.
No.
Because they were not how-to. This is how-to.
Yes.
Drawn in her naughty but irreverent style.
Yep.
Where, that also like, in her like sample pages, always makes a point to include people of different color, body type, gender, mm-hmm. Sexualities. All this is...
it's real people.
Yeah, it's real people in there. There's some cute little slugs that show up periodically to advise on something, which I'm not going to say what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I have not yet read it, but I know that Ojoy's sex toy was really good, and I feel that this is both a good thing to have and probably very informative for folks.
I just have a few more to add. Spider-Gwen number 3 has come out.
How much sex stuff is in that one?
There's not a lot of sex stuff, but there are giant spider robots with giant swords.
Okay.
Which is
that's
pretty
kind of
awesome.
Phallic, okay.
And basically this has two different Spider-Gwen teams vying to stop the Inheritors. One led by Miles, the other one led by Otto Octavius.
Miles is but a child. How can he lead that?
There's some other groups, too. They've split off into several different groups.
Yeah, I mean, but those are the
main
ones.
Those are the two
generals. Those are the big ones. And sort of seeing them going about stopping the Inheritors in different ways. It was a good issue. Infinity Wars number 5, which I think is the penultimate issue of the series. I could be wrong. But... Mike Diodato continues to knock it out of the park on the art as Loki and his group of Avengers, which include Kang and Ms. Marvel and Emma Frost, to try to take on the sort of crazy Gamora, who has all the Infinity Stones.
May I ask why Loki is leading good guys?
Because Loki's evil. And
why are they working with an evil man? Trick them?
Yeah,
did
there
he
might
have,
be some...
like, say, like, this is the only plan that will work?
Yeah, there may be a little bit of a trickster vibe
to it. I just wonder what his deal was.
Yeah. There's also...
I like Loki.
Diodato does a great... there's some Hulk battle in here, and he draws the hell out of
it. He's a really good Hulk artist.
And then finally, Death of Inhumans number 5, which is the final issue of Donny Cates' miniseries that was supposed to be the end of the Inhumans. There is a resolution to all things.
Are they all dead?
I am not going to say. There are some of them that will stay dead. But this is all sort of about how evil the Kree are and how sort of they view the Inhumans and what Black Bolt's response to that. Finally sort of separating them from the Kree.
Let's just quick mention that cover. There's a lovely painted rendition of Black Bolt mourning the dead Lockjaw.
I mean, it's his pupper.
I know. I have to say, it's a very good cover.
Yeah.
It's
Cary Andrews, which I typically don't like his stuff, but
he's a good artist.
It's an emotional cover.
Yep.
His Lockjaw is an amazing pet.
Yep. And I suspect we may see him again.
It's possible.
Spoiler warning.
All right. That's it for comics this week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some TV shows and a movie. and possibly vengeance and revenge.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
All right, so we're going to talk about a TV show that Nick and I have seen and a movie that Dave has seen. I don't think Nick has seen it.
What? No, I have not.
And then we're also going to talk about a thing that I have seen.
That so mysterious.
Yes.
What is it going to be? What's it? What is it, Randy?
I'm not telling you.
Say it.
No. Let's build the anticipation build.
All right. Listeners, start. Get some snacks ready.
Listeners who paid attention to the first may remember what it is I'm going to talk about.
Ooh. Extra intriguing.
Yes, exactly.
Have you solved the puzzle, listener? I don't know what I'm doing.
It just got weird.
I was trying to make it like old time radio.
Yeah. You're gonna bang on a sheet of metal to make it sound like a thunderstorm.
No, I think it's actually supposed to rain today normally.
Yeah.
Much to your chagrin, Randy. Sorry.
It is. I hate the rain. Dave, you want to talk about Venom?
Let's talk about Venom. So I knew from early reviews of this that it was kind of savaged by critics, but kind of liked by fans, or at least liked by audiences. And I decided it would be a good dumb fun movie, and I feel like it kind of delivered. In some ways, it was dumber than I expected, but it was pretty entertaining, and I even got a kind of good laugh when they used the Wilhelm scream at one point in it, because at that point it felt appropriate. It also, I feel like, goes out on a particular high note in their outro sequence, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. It was ridiculous, and that made actually me want to see it.
Yeah. So I don't know much about Venom. I was there for when he first showed up in Spider-Man back in like 299 or 300 or whatever it was where he first showed. But I haven't followed him as a solo character very often. So I was just, and I knew this movie was kind of going to be Venom as anti-hero of sorts. And so we pick up with reporter Eddie Brock, played by, why can't I suddenly say his name?
Tom Holland.
Tom Hardy.
Not, or Tom Hardy. Holland. Not Tom Hardy.
Yeah. Tom Hardy, who never met a level speaking voice he couldn't mangle. he does always sound like he is going through adult puberty. and this is no exception to the rule, but I did find him kind of likably weird in this. His Eddie Brock is kind of like a news reporter. Like, he has like a news show, and it sounds like he's kind of a pit bull. He'll go in there and get interviews that other people wouldn't, and he ends up crossing this kind of who's the SpaceX guy?
Elon Musk.
He kind of an Elon Musk type of guy who's got some creepy vibes about him, whose space project is returning, and in fact, in the opening sequence, you'll see crash lands with samples of the symbiote. They'll go on to kind of explain a little bit more about it later and even reference the symbiote world. But it crash lands, and there's actually a few of them loose in different places, and various kind of possession elements of the suit getting into people. The problem is that it kind of uses them like most people don't bond well with it, and so they end up kind of dead husks, and it has to transfer to another wearer.
Have they done anything like that with in the comics? I guess not. They're not like draining like energy vampire type things, right?
I don't think so. But
when I was reading the Donnie Cates ones, and I don't know what the deal is, but there's those weird symbiotes that had the other symbols on it.
Yeah.
They did have like bodies in them. They were like had like I think kind of husked up the people.
Mm.
I think at the very least, you know, we knew that like the symbiote early on was kind of draining Spider-Man of energy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but not quite on this level. And so here it's a little more like this weird infectious thing. Early on, and essentially in poking around too hard, he ends up seeing it and bonding with one of them. I feel like the movie is a little slow to get going, although he's likable enough. Who is it playing his girlfriend? She's a
Michelle
sort of
Williams?
Notable actor. Yeah, Michelle Williams, Slumming, playing his girlfriend in it. But she's fine. Weirdly seemed like Gwen Stacy to me because she had like the Gwen Stacy haircut and even I think like a green sweater and like the miniskirt sort of thing. It clearly was not her, but it's
might have been deliberate.
It almost
nod,
seemed
though.
Like they were doing a visual nod, or maybe at one point it was gonna be something like that. I have no idea. Anyway, But I do feel like it kind of gets really going once they've bonded and you start getting the bromance, the weird creepy bromance between the creepily voiced Venom suit and Eddie Brock.
Yep.
There's weirdly funny stuff. There's some dark stuff. I cannot say the writing is particularly good.
Yep.
It reminded me of sort of how superhero movies were in the 90s.
Okay.
But with sort of a, I'm not even going to say modern special effects, but more like mid-2000s special effects.
Yep.
They're pretty special effects-y. Like, you can see the CGI-ishness, but they also do not skimp on things that you expect of Venom, like, you know, sort of T-1000 style manipulations, using his arm as a scythe, healing injuries. Yeah, sort of forming weapons out of it, and there are some other symbiotes in there. What else goes on? There's some big chase sequences. The action sequences, I feel like, are pretty good.
I remember on the preview, he runs through a giant tree.
He does. He hates logs.
I also heard he makes out with himself.
Sort of, yes. There's no doubt that they decided to go ahead and go there when, at one point, the costume bonded with his girlfriend at the time, because it's a weird movie, kisses him and transfers the costume to him, and in the kiss, she's, like, venomed up, and it's like his, like, venomy tongue is flopping around. I told you it was weird. Randy's giving me a look like he didn't think I was telling the truth.
Hey,
it's weird.
I mean, I'm for sex of all kinds. It's fine.
Dave, you know me.
Yeah.
You know my tastes. Am I going to hate this movie?
I actually don't think you would hate it. I think you would find it weirdly, maybe weirdly amusing.
Okay, all right.
Because I don't think you have enough invested in Venom, and
no.
Because it doesn't infringe on Spider-Man or any other things, It kind of does become its own thing, and it was more successful at doing that than I expected it to be. I felt like it was a cult movie in the making.
So here's my issue, though.
Yeah.
It was successful enough.
Yeah.
That they're probably going to make a sequel.
Yeah.
And Sony might be like, oh, no, we got to handle this thing. We're going to take Spider-Man back now.
Yeah.
That's what I worry about.
Yeah, well, that would be probably bad if they
did
that. Yeah,
that's my worry.
I mean, how does Venom look, like, just full on?
Pretty cool. Better than he did in Spider-Man 3, where he still had from the Raimi version, where he still had the kind of basketball, imprint on the outside. It is very much kind of like the oversized Venom,
yeah.
He is like, when he moves real fast, and he'll do kind of like faster than the T-1000 stuff, where like a tendril will zip out behind him and like knock the crap out of somebody. And they definitely thought through the action sequences, and made Venom a likable character, kind of like a Mr. Hyde you want to get behind, kind of.
Okay.
But I don't want to oversell it, because it is kind of also a little bit of a cheap, crappy movie, too. but I had more fun than I expected. It was sort of what I wanted it to be, or, like, based on the trailers I saw. Once I saw him telling a dude he would rip his arm and face off and he'd be like a turd in the wind, I was like, well, this is going to be a crazy movie, isn't it? And it was. There's a special points for the end sequence, which is the post-credits. Actually, there was the post-credits thing is about 3 minutes of the Spider-Verse movie.
That's interesting.
They just straight up show you like a 3-minute sequence of it.
Weird.
Which, when I was seeing it with Fathery, my buddy, we were looking at the credits to the music, and they're like theme from Into the Spider-Verse or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're like, when did that show up? And then like they sort of do a thing where it's almost like the credits kind of halt and show you that before they finish.
Hmm.
But before that, there is a outro credit sequence teaser thing. I don't know. What do they call it?
Stingers.
Stinger, yeah. Which you can probably guess what it is if you know anything about Venom and what they might want to do in a sequel. Who they cast in this particular role is kind of hilarious. Another case of slumming for sure.
Oh yeah.
But kind of one of those things that was like, I had to laugh at the sort of ridiculous audacity of it, which was the general tone of the movie. So I enjoyed it.
Okay.
All right.
Fascinating wig.
Nick, you and I watched the Amazon Prime show Homecoming.
Yep.
Which is 10 episodes, I believe?
It was 10 episodes.
And is based on the podcast Homecoming that we both really liked.
Yep.
And I know Dave liked, although I don't remember if he finished.
I listened to all of Homecoming. I liked it quite a bit, although I did feel like the season 2 was not as strong as season 1.
And this incorporates some elements from season 2.
It does, yeah. I feel like it's got all of it into 10 episodes.
Yep.
I think, Nick, you liked this better than I did.
I did. I wasn't sure exactly if I would or if I would know all the beats that are happening, but there was enough in it that I was like, okay, I can see.
They definitely modify as it goes along. I feel like the first two or maybe even three episodes were almost like beat for beat.
Yeah.
And I was starting to feel like they also do this weird thing when they're showing like the present sequences as opposed to the flashbacks. It's like shot in like weird... Like
sepia or something like that?
Well, no. They shrink the screen. They shrink the screen. And it's actually like a vertical.
So it's like you're watching it on an iPhone camera.
Yes.
That is very weird. It's an odd choice.
But there's a reason for it.
Okay, so let me just quick say, just in case people don't know the podcast, the baseline premise starts with a therapist who deals with soldiers who have PTSD.
PTSD, yeah.
Yep.
And at least in the podcast, for the several episodes... that's kind of feels like what it's about. She's got a very overbearing boss who's talking about some slightly mysterious project and wanting results. But other than that, it sort of seems normal. And then before the end of it, though, there is a sort of heightened element to it that kind of kicks the intrigue into high gear.
It takes a while to get to it.
But it is like a great repartee between in the podcast Oscar Isaacs as the soldier who's had has gone through a lot of stuff, who very much bonds with Catherine Keener's therapist.
Yep.
And I have to ask, do they keep the story about Titanic too?
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes.
God.
Yes, that is
that
in
is
there.
In there.
Okay.
Well, I mean, this is still Eli Horowitz, who was the head writer and the sort of brainchild of this, and he's involved in this.
Well, that's the thing is the Gimlet actually they had Alex Inc., which was a TV show about. Yeah. Their startup podcast, and they talked about this in the Homecoming. They're doing a behind the scenes of the show for Gimlet right now, and I thought it was interesting that Alex Inc. they had no involvement in, like it was handed off to NBC. It was early on they gave rights to it. It was on one day and then off the next. They clearly don't go out and say it, but they clearly were not happy with it, which makes sense because it was terrible.
Yeah.
This one they said they wanted to basically see, hey, can we do this? And so this is the people who did the podcast doing a TV show.
And they got A-list people to translate it. Like, it was the most A-list of voice acting on the podcast. Yep. And the movie, who do we have in the TV show?
In the show, Julia Roberts plays the Catherine Keener part.
Yep.
I was listening for the name for the guy who plays Oscar Isaac's role, which unfortunately I don't think...
he's likable.
Stephen James, is that his name? Yeah. Who is an actor known for Race, Selma... and has been on some shows.
I mean, he's very good.
He's good, but he's not Oscar Isaac. And
you mean Oscar Isaac?
Julia Roberts is great, but she's not Catherine Keener, who I think was better at the role. And Bobby Cannavale, who plays the sort of the overbearing boss, is really good, but has a completely different energy than David Schwimmer.
Yeah. Well, and I think it all boils down...
I sort of
down...
felt like I kind of, in the podcast, and I haven't seen the show at all, I sort of fell in love with those characters.
Yeah.
And do you feel like the movie, the TV show kind of conveys that?
I don't think it's as strong, but I also think we get a stronger character with the sort of investigator.
Yeah, Shea Whigham plays the
Shea Whigham.
He's great.
He's fantastic in the show.
Does he have an analog to the
Thomas Carrasco? I think he was in there. He was like the DOD guy looking into it.
Oh, okay. He's the one sort of interviewing Catherine Keener at her job, and his role I think is expanded on in here.
Okay,
just because it makes a little bit more sense.
Uh-huh.
But not to be mean to the podcast or anything, but I don't think it saw like. It was out there, and people listened to it, but I don't think it hit, like, the larger mass
of
people.
No, I do think that's what this is for.
And this is definitely that.
Yeah, I just, as someone who liked the podcast, I was kind of disappointed in the show.
This is like Randy saying, this is like you're doing the book was
better. The book
was better
than the movie, I agree.
But maybe the movie will draw some light on the book.
Yes.
But Nick was pretty happy with the movie and the book.
I thought it was a good interpretation of it. And I like all the cast members.
Hour-long episodes? Half hour?
Actually, no. Half hour.
Okay, so they kind of kept to the format.
They did. And Dave, you were supposed to watch this so that you could be the third opinion.
Oh, I could have been y'all are yin and yang, I would be the guy who perfectly balances the force?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't.
I know.
I think most people check this out because of Julia Roberts, and if more like it's shown on Gimlet Media and all of their podcasts, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Do the credits say like based on the podcast, whatever? Like in other words, would somebody watching it for the first time know that it came from a podcast?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think it does say based on
like
the
Walking
podcast.
Dead is always like from the graphic novel series, but
it might.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Look into that, readers, and please send us a single email that says...
we already have our call to action.
Okay, never mind.
Your call to action
listeners.
This week is to tell us
If you know what Wings is.
Yes, I know what Wings is. Now I know what Wings are, because that's a different...
Yes,
a different
we're talking range. About Wings, the TV Wings series, the TV show. Not Wings, the things you eat.
Right. I know what Wings is.
I thought you were going to say, like, Wings, the things you flap.
That's but, or Wings, the things you flap.
Or Wings, the band that Paul McCartney was in, was even further back.
That's a little...
I'm going to write a children's book called Wings, : the things you flap.
All right. The last thing I want to mention is Into the Dark.
Yes.
I think that's what it's called. It's Hulu's anthology series. It's from Blumhouse.
Uh-huh.
And basically it is a...
A.K.A. the producers of, like, every horror movie from Insidious to Get Out.
Yeah. It is a Halloween or a holiday-themed anthology movie that comes out the first month every year, or every month. It's going to go for a year. And the first one is a Halloween-themed one on which it opens on a hitman having killed someone... And he has to dispose of the body, and he winds up carrying it with him. And this becomes his Halloween costume, basically. He winds up at his Halloween party. His escape or his extraction goes wrong, and he winds up on the streets of, I think it's New York. It might be L.A. With this body, like, wrapped up like a mummy. And everybody thinks that's his costume.
I like it.
And so he falls in.
I thought you were going to have a Weekend at Bernie's deep cut.
And he falls in with these people... these sort of younger guys, these 20-somethings, who, like, take him to this party and all that, and it quickly turns bad, and he's almost like this slash. When they find out what's going on, he turns into sort of this slasher, and he's after them, and is trying to get the body. It's a very strange episode,
mm-hmm.
but it was definitely worth a watch. And I gather the new one that just came out is Thanksgiving-based.
Okay.
There's not a lot of Thanksgiving horror.
Nope.
No.
The only thing I can think of was the fake Thanksgiving trailer in...
Grindhouse,
yep. Yeah. That was the Eli Rob Roth. Zombie Eli Roth one. Yep. Yeah.
Eli Roth.
Is there any notable people in this?
No. It is... I mean, the only one I recognize was White Josh from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh.
You know what is interesting to me is the sort of rise of horror TV in the last 10 years with American Horror Story, mm-hmm. Haunting of Hill House, this, and some others I'm going to forget, including, like, stuff that was forgotten, sort of like Hemlock Grove.
Exorcist
on Hulu.
Yeah.
So they're out there, and that's cool that they're... And these are not all, like... There's some schlock, in the even intentional schlock, like sure. Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yeah.
But there's, like, some serious efforts out there, and I like that we're getting... I mean, I suppose having one that's kind of weird like this, and American Horror Story could also be weird.
Very weird.
But they... it's nice to have some diverse choices so that horror doesn't just have to be, oh, it's a slasher TV show, or, oh, it's a ghost story. You don't know what you're going to get into if there is a new horror show starting.
That's true. All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.